Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the abuse excuse when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our forefathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our federal constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took our silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced into our economic system our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto. And they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage now in place of silver coins. So in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of our many lessons in our Mosaic Law School, conducted twice a year here at the law school. And if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're talking about this thing of censorship. It's a part of a book written by Alan Dershowitz. Remember Alan Dershowitz, the radical liberal law professor at Harvard University. And he wrote a book called The Abuse Excuse. And I think you can probably get a copy of it right now. It's in the hardback. The price at that time, 1995, when it came out, was $22.95. I'm sure that for $30 you can get a copy at Barnes & Noble. Now, the reason I suggest it is because in my grading of books, I call it an ordinary book, or I call it a 1 in 20, or a 1 in 100. This is one of those 1 in 100 books. There's nothing else out there in the marketplace like it. Yeah, you can buy a lot of books on politics. They're about as common as pig tracks in a barnyard. But once in a while, somebody will write a story or write a book that is totally unique. There's just nothing out there like it. And so the question arises, well, is it really the truth? And from what I can determine here, it is the truth. Now, I said the other day that there are some areas in here that I disagree with. For instance, pornography. And I want to take up the subject of pornography right now because Dershowitz makes the case for pornography. Whether you agree with it or not, there's an important reason why we ought to keep our hands off of pornography. A very important reason. Because once government gets the power to regulate pornography, they've got the power to regulate the Bible, which is filled with pornography. Yeah, that's right. The Bible has some pornographic stories in it. I mean, really raw stories. Not of the type that you would see in Deep Throat, you know, if you bought the movie or saw the movie, or if you were reading Hustler magazine. But, you know, there are people out there who, when they read David and Bathsheba, call that pornographic. And Samson and Delilah, pornographic. And my grandmother told me that she wouldn't read the Bible because it was filled with all kinds of filth that was in her mind, her education, her upbringing, called that filth and violence. And she was opposed to filth and violence. And she was opposed to the Bible. Now, I'm not here to force the Bible down anybody's throat, but I don't want it taken away from me. I'd like to decide for myself whether Samson, Delilah, or David and Bathsheba, or the stories that we see here in the Scripture are really filthy and pornographic. The creator of the universe didn't think that they were, or didn't think that you couldn't handle it. Now, government, for instance, they come along and they regulate things like marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. Now, in Genesis 1, verses 28 through 30, God said, "I've given you every green herb." Now, here we are, human beings, living on planet Earth. This thing is filled with literally millions of different types of green plants. And God made every single green plant by the millions for a purpose. Sometimes we call them weeds. As a farmer, I can tell you there's a bunch of damn weeds out there. Now, the truth of the matter is, those plants that we call weeds have a purpose in the overall ecology of the world. Canadian thistles and star thistles and obnoxious plants like kudzu have a reason for being. They weren't created accidentally. They weren't created on some kind of a whim. Every single one of them had a purpose. Now, just because you don't know what that purpose is doesn't mean that that plant is no good. Although, you know, we as farmers who want to grow grass and clover in our fields and have real neat rows of corn, when we see other types of vegetation growing out there, that makes us very angry, and we want to go out there and round them up. And we have a product called Roundup, and we go out there and we just kill anything that gets in our way. That's short-sighted, number one. And when we talk about censorship in the marketplace, when government gets that censorship, when they get that power of censorship, well, you're not going to get it back. And that's the problem with the Patriot Act and Homeland Security. Now, once government takes that power, the other party, the Democrats, now that they've taken over, do you think they're going to repeal the Patriot Act and Homeland Security? No, sir. George Bush created the power, and by God, Barack Obama is going to exercise it. You're not getting that power away from him. He's not going to voluntarily give that up. Now, as a result of that, you and I down here are going to suffer some deprivation of our freedoms and liberties that we had before that we don't have now. Censorship does that. And I mentioned to you in the last program, I said censorship isn't just telling you what you can and can't read. Censorship is also a form of taking away from you your ability to know so that you'll make the wrong decision. Make the wrong decision. And I'm going to tell you a story here when we get into this hot and heavy. But you need to have all of the information available. You need all of the information in the Bible to make intelligent decisions about it. And if somebody were given the power to censor and call it pornographic, then they can extend that to the next step. Now you sit there and say, well, but he wouldn't do that. Yes, he would. Government has always exercised the utmost power to repress us. It has never failed in the history of mankind. Government always represses the people. in every single case, every single time, without exception. And if you know of an exception, tell me. Let me see what it is. Now, once in a while, from time to time, God has freed us from that bondage. And 1787 was one of those times. And then over that period of time, in the last 225 years, we have successfully re-enslaved ourselves. You know, we were slaves in Egypt, and God freed us. And then over a period of time, we enslaved ourselves again. And the Bible is that book that reveals how that enslavement came about. So over time, you know, we ought to learn from history. Those that can't learn from history are bound to repeat it. So let's take a look at censorship by a newspaper. It's on page 303. Now listen to this. This is Alan Dershowitz now. Listen to his comments and his arguments now on if there were an award given for displaying a lack of courage in journalism, it would surely go to the Boston Globe for its recent decision to assist a Massachusetts district attorney in a censorship crusade. The Globe's capitulation grew out of a Massachusetts statute that set forth a procedure to censor allegedly obscene material. And under that procedure, a district attorney who deems it necessary and wise to ban books or magazines must first publish their titles in at least two newspapers of general circulation. So the district attorney of Hampton County found a Springfield, Massachusetts newspaper willing to accept a notice listing the targeted titles. But both the Globe and the Boston Herald refused to print it. Their rationale was that the titles themselves, which included Hand to Mouth, Backside to the Future 2, and Good Companion Hot Pizza Ass, were obscene and violated the standards of their family newspapers. Now, the district attorney, when threatened to sue them, the Herald stuck to its guns, but the Globe wimped out and ran the notice anyway. Now, the publisher of the Globe, William O. Taylor, explained it this way. He said, "We're performing a public service here to remove these magazines. The district attorney cannot prosecute unless they had this notice placed, and so, yes, we're helping the situation." Now, since when is censorship a public service, and especially when it's facilitated by a newspaper? And since when is a newspaper supposed to be helping a district attorney do the dirty job of prosecuting dirty books? Is the Globe now going to continue helping prosecutors and performing public service by disclosing confidential communications between journalists and their sources? This kind of cooperation would have been a boon for Senator Joseph McCarthy's blacklisting. Can you imagine the purge that he could have unleashed if newspapers had printed the names of communist and fellow travelers identified by McCarthy back in the 1950s? Now, the Globe also explained its capitulation by saying that it wanted to avoid litigation. But this is the same newspaper that litigates virtually every subpoena and every libel suit brought against it. Now, the Globe is quick to wrap itself in the First Amendment when it chooses to fight, but the paper conveniently forgets all about that when throwing in the towel in this case of pornography. The paper's publisher also forgets that the towel that it is throwing in does not belong to the Globe alone. Every newspaper is a trustee of the First Amendment, as the Globe is quick to remind us when it seeks support in its libel battles. Now, the courts clearly would have supported the Globe's right to refuse to publish a district attorney's notice. More than 15 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that no government agency could compel a private newspaper to print an item that it chose not to publish. Now, the Globe knew the paper would win if it fought this case. Its publishers just did not want to spend the money required to do battle, nor did they want to alienate their local prosecutor. And no self-respecting newspaper should take orders from government officials about what to publish or what not to publish. Now, once one newspaper buckles, it will be more difficult for other papers to fend off such pressures. And then once a newspaper agrees to publish items at the command of government officials, it will be easier for these officials to demand that newspapers refrain from publishing certain items. The Boston Globe has brought us one small step closer to totalitarianism by its unprincipled capitulation to the Hampton County District Attorney. And shame should be placed on publisher William Taylor, who regards his newspaper as one of the nation's most liberal big city daily papers. And he should contemplate what those words mean and then go back to school to do some reading on the history of the First Amendment. That was first published in August of 1991. Now, those are the thoughts of the author. Those aren't my thoughts per se. Those are the thoughts of the author, Alan M. Dershowitz. Now, I'm going to second his motion. Now, I'm opposed to pornography. When I read those three titles to you, did you cringe a little bit and say, "Oh my God, Gordon, what in the hell's the matter with you wanting to defend that kind of pornographic material?" And the answer is, I don't want to defend that kind of pornographic material, but I don't want to ban it or censor it either. And here's why. If we give government the power to censor, to decide what you should or should not, or what you can and cannot read, including this pornographic material, then we give government the power to decide what's good for us. Now, I would like to be the censor. I would like to be the guy that says, this is what can be published and this is what cannot be published. And I will use my standards because my standards are better than yours. But who in the hell says that my standards are better than yours? Who says that George Gordon should have the power to censor what you know or don't know or what you can learn or cannot learn? Now, a lot of people like me, and a lot of people hate my guts. That's what happens, you know, when you get into the public limelight. And a lot of people like this guy Dershowitz, and a lot of people don't like him. I'm not here to like or dislike the man one way or the other. I disagree with some of his policies, some of his conclusions, like the death penalty. And I mentioned that the other day. I'm in favor of the death penalty. What I'm not in favor of, and I'm not in favor of the death penalty being employed in the way that it's being employed because it's unscriptural. The death penalty was given by the creator of the universe himself. And he said, here are the 24 crimes that are worthy of death, and I want you to put these people to death that violate these laws. Now, we came along and created a new government. We created a new God here called the United States of America and California and Washington, Oregon, and California. And we decided, now here's the way we see this, and here's the way we're going to do this. And I think that's a mistake. But, you know, that's the decision that people have made, and so that's what we're stuck with. Dershowitz takes a look at this and he says, but the death penalty doesn't work. And he's right. The death penalty doesn't work because it's not being employed correctly. It's being employed in secret. It's not an open and notorious execution done in the marketplace so that everybody can hear and fear and see it and learn from it. No, they take a killer and they hide him back here in the secret chambers of the prison and execute him. And when they execute him, they don't stone him to death. They give him a lethal injection, or they hang him or electrocute him. They don't spill blood, which is a requirement. That when you execute somebody, you have to spill his blood. They don't do that. All right, so I'm not here to pick a fight with Dershowitz or to defend him one way or the other, but his point is well taken. His point is that if the newspapers of America, or you and I and everybody else, go around here deciding what is good for people to read and what isn't good for people to read outside of the marketplace. See, outside of the marketplace. I don't have to buy Hustler magazine, and I don't. And I don't have to buy Penthouse, and I don't have to buy these pornographic movies. And the people that are buying them shouldn't. and the people that publish them shouldn't. And if we had a perfect world, we wouldn't. But we don't have a perfect world. And if we give that district attorney that power to decide what you're going to read and what you're not going to read, then that same district attorney can, with the help of other people in the community who are just as serious-minded, just as concerned about what you should or shouldn't read, can edit out David and Bathsheba and Samson and Delilah. And I don't think we ought to do that. And so I'm dead set opposed to this thing of censorship. Now, I mentioned to you the other day that censorship isn't just the district attorney going out here and saying, well, now look at this publication. We want to ban this from the marketplace. They also use censorship by keeping information away from you or by giving you false information. False information is also a form of censorship. Now, let me take a look here at another story, and let's tie these ends together. Depression by any other name. Now, as you watch the news, like I did last night, I sat down at 5:30 and I'm watching Brian Williams. And then at 6 o'clock, I sat down and I watched the Lehrer News Hour. And every night, night after night after night, these media moguls over here tell us about the dangers of deflation and how the government is just fighting to protect us from deflation and a great depression like the depression of the 1930s. We just want to help. And so, in order to fight this deflation, this depression, the government now has spent a lot of money, $8.5 trillion in 13 weeks. It is an unprecedented period in our history. They have expanded the money supply by 275% in 13 weeks. The only word that I can use to express myself is insane. And you know something? The whole nation's gone insane. They've gone insane because we have been kept from, we have had the other side censored for 75 years. I mean, the truth, the rational basis for this fear of depression has been so skewered by censors and censorship over the past 75 years that we Americans, we look at deflation and we say, oh my God, I'm terrified by deflation. Therefore, the opposite to that must be good. Inflation must be good. We want more inflation. We want to inflate. We want to prevent this deflation. We want to prevent this depression. And so we have been brainwashed. And this is also a form of censorship, this brainwashing. Let me ask you a question here. Think about this for a minute. The price of gasoline from July through about October went up from our September, June, July, August, through the summer, it went up from about $2, it went up to $4 and some change. Do you remember that? Did you like that? Did you just rush down to the gas station and say, oh my God, I hope the price went up 13 cents today. Oh, it did. Look, the price went up 13 cents. I think I'll fill up my tank. Just really excited you, didn't you? Now, if you were like me, you know, your stomach just turned. Every time you went to the gas station, it was up 3 cents a day. That's what it was doing here. It's gone up about 2 or 3 cents a day, every day. Until it hit about $4.35, and then one day it shut off, and it started going down at $147 a barrel. I think. Yesterday, I saw the price of oil went down below $40. Now, the price of gasoline is here where I live is below $2 a gallon. Now, before all of this started, you know, the price of gasoline was about $1.10 a gallon, and then, you know, the price started escalating up, and then it hit $2 a gallon. People complained, and then it went down. So what it boils down to is that the powers that be run the price up to a god-awful level, like $4 a gallon. And so they were interviewing a guy yesterday. This young lady was a college girl, college senior. And she said that she thought the price of gasoline at $2 to $2.50 was fair and reasonable, and she had no complaints. See, here's the way this censorship works. We run the price of gasoline up to $4. Then we reduce it down to $2, and then you sit there and say, God, this is wonderful, ain't it? Hell, the price of gas was $1 here, and it went to $2, and we cried. Then they dropped it to $1.50, and we said, well, $1.50 is pretty good. Then they raised the price to $3, and then they lowered it to $2.50, and we said, well, $2.50 is a pretty good price. Then they raised it to $4, then they reduced it to $2, and now we're just happy as clams with $2 gas. See the way that works? Well, a guy by the name of Howard Katz wrote an article here the other day. He called it Depression by Any Other Name. Let me give you the introduction here, and let's take a look at the censorship story. He says, well, the dollar is going down, and Goldman Sachs predicts $30 crude oil, and that makes it a good bet that most commodities are in the process of forming bottoms right now. The gold, of course, bottomed 7 weeks ago. I say it's time to get with the program. The Fed is printing money, and everything is going to go up. I underlined that. The Fed is printing money, and everything is going up. Well, how in the hell can everything be going up? Your house prices are going down. Gasoline is going down. All the commodities are going down. These are all the classic signs of depression, deflation. Oh, my God, this is terrible. Or is it? Is it terrible? Did you cry when the price of gasoline went from $4 to $3.50? Did you cry? Did you write Kit Bond and say, Kit, stop this deflation now? When the price of gas went to $3 and $2.50 and $2, did you write letters to Dianne Feinstein and said, do something, stop this deflation? Now, of course, when your house price goes down, you write letters and you say, oh my God, I paid $200,000 for this house and now it's only worth $150,000. You know, it depends on which side of this inflation-deflation line you're on. If you're an oil company or an oil sheik, you want the price of gasoline at $4 a gallon. Hell, I don't deny it. If I was an oil sheik and I had oil wells, I would want $4 a gallon gas. But is $4 a gallon gas for oil sheiks in Arabia good for 200 million Americans who have to go out and pay $4 to buy it? Is it good for our economy to run the price of gasoline up to $4 a gallon? Hell, everybody knows the answer to that. So when the price goes down to $2, for the broad majority of people, isn't that good? You know, the price of copper was 80 cents a pound in 2000, and then it went up to $3.50 a pound or thereabouts, and now it's back down to about a buck and a half. Hell, it's still double what it was in 2000, but today, you know, if you can get copper for a buck and a half a pound, you're jumping up and down saying, wow, that's a good price. What the hell's good about it? It's double what it was when this run-up began. So it depends upon your definition of deflation and what's good for the most people. Now, the bottom line is deflation is good for the most of the people. Most of us are going to benefit from deflation. The people who are not going to benefit from deflation are the bankers, big corporations, and government. So who is it that wants inflation? Big corporations, government, and banks. And they have given it to us. And they're going to continue to give it to us. But that's not good for you and me. So if I had to choose, I'd choose deflation over inflation. Now, we're not going to get deflation. This is a temporary phenomenon that is coming to an end right now as I speak. Hey, let me give you a reminder here as we progress along, if I can find my reminder. Here it is. This is the halfway point in the program, and the FCC and a number of other agencies around the world want us to remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law or an editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about censorship over here. Now, censorship, ordinarily we think of censorship as the censor taking his black felt-tip pen and just making a mark through so you cannot read the material. But censorship comes in other forms. And it's those other forms of hidden, secret censorship over here that I want to bring your attention to. Because once government gets this power to censor, they don't give it up. And that keeps us ignorant. And they've been using censorship now for the last 75 years to keep us ignorant. And that ignorance over here is coming back to cause us a harm. Now, one of the modalities that they've used is the public school. They take us into public school and they educate us. Well, excuse me. Educate us to what standards? Who decides what you should or shouldn't know? Well, the censors in the public school decide what you should and shouldn't know. So, what's your view on inflation versus deflation? Your view on inflation versus deflation is that deflation is bad and that inflation is good, although out in the marketplace when the price of gasoline went to $4, you cringed, and when it went to $2, you rejoiced. Exactly the opposite. When you actually go into the marketplace and you actually perform there in the marketplace, you love deflation. But you write letters to your public representatives and say, well, what we need is more inflation. That's because the censor has censored from you the knowledge of deflation and what it is and how it works and why. Why it's good for us. And why inflation is bad for us. That's why I would prefer that the marketplace make these decisions. Whether it be pornography or whether it be the Bible, I mean, nobody is putting a gun to your head and forcing you to go to church. But if we give this power to government, government's going to take the Bible away from us. And I'm just telling you that that's always been the history of it. When government gets the power, they will take the Bible away. I don't want them to take the Bible away. You are not being forced to read the pornography in the Bible or the violence. The marketplace decides who's going to buy what. And that's why when it comes to pornography that Alan Dershowitz says, leave the marketplace alone. Now, I would suspect in all probability that Mr. Dershowitz does not read Hustler magazine. He does not strike me as the kind of person who would go to watch Deep Throat. I don't think that kind of perversion is in his character. And yet he defends other people's right to go watch that, view that, buy that, publish that. And why does he do that? Because he recognizes that once the government gets that power to censor, they're going to use it to the utmost, and then keep away from him other things that he wants to read, wants to know. And he's exactly right. That's the history of it. That's what goes on. Now, I don't think he reads the Bible. That doesn't strike me as being one of his pastimes. I don't know that he does or doesn't, but it doesn't strike me as he does. But he's not sitting there saying, I want to take the Bible away from you people out there because I think it's bad for you. And I think, in his view, he might think that that's pretty bad for us. But I don't want to give Alan Dershowitz the power to censor either. I don't want him to have that kind of power. Now listen to this cat's guy now again. He says, today I wish to discuss a segment of the Goldbug community which is echoing the establishment line that the United States is on the verge, and some say already, in a serious decline in prices. These people usually take things a step further and predict depression rather than mere recession. Unfortunately, this merely makes them more wrong, more incorrect, and taking their advice will turn out to be a serious money-losing proposition. These people are generally good people and understand that one cannot get something for nothing, or as the Russians say, the only free cheese is in the mousetrap. They are consequently outraged at the current policies of the U.S. government, both Democrat and Republican. This predisposes them to believe the worst. Therefore, when the establishment admits to a recession, they carry it one step further. These people are correct in that things are indeed bad. From 1972 to 2002, the real wages of the American worker declined by 18%. Now, let's pause right there. Boys and girls, did you know that your real wages between 1972 and 2002 actually declined by 18%? That's because the censor kept that information away from you. As compared with the average 30-year gain of 60% through most of American history. All right, so going back to 1787 up through 1972, every 30 years we gained 60% more purchasing power from our wages on average, every 30 years, 2% a year. But from 1972 on, we've lost 18%, first time in history that that's happened. Now, did you get that out of your newspaper? Did the Lair News Hour report that to you? Did you got that from Brian Williams and CBS or NBC? And that's the censor at work. All right, now, by 2007, houses had become unaffordable for the average person. But there is an intellectual error here, which is very important. The period from 1972 to 2008 has been a period when America has followed bad policies and we have gotten poorer. But it has definitely not been a period of falling prices. We have gotten poorer during this period of inflation. So if inflation is good for us, we should have gotten wealthier. Now, are prices going to rise or are prices going to fall? That's the crucial thing for you to know. But it's been censored. And nobody is reporting this side of the story. And that's because of censorship. Now, the proper definition of a depression is a period when the whole country becomes significantly poorer. This is what you and I and all the people in this country think of when we hear the word depression. But under this definition of depression, the worst depression in this country's history was in these 5 years, from 1942 to 1946. The worst depression in the history of the United States was between 1942 and 1946. This, however, is not considered a depression by any establishment economist, even though it was impossible to buy a house or a new car, and both gasoline and many food items had to be rationed. Now, the average American's gasoline allotment was limited to $3 a week. Now, you complain about $4 a gallon gas, but you see, you didn't understand. The censors never told you in your public schools that the worst depression in our history was during World War II. They told you, no, it was during that period from 1929 to 1935. That wasn't true. No. If you take a look at the consumption of butter in 1929 and the consumption of butter in 1935, the consumption of butter increased in America every single year from 1929 to 35. And there was no rationing of butter. Now, wait a minute. Butter is a luxury. Most of you people don't eat butter today. You eat margarine. You people are eating margarine. Very rarely do people eat butter because you can't afford it. You haven't seen any price deflation over the last 20 years. You've seen inflation. And you're living poorer. You're eating margarine. You're not eating butter. During the 1929 to 35 period, the consumption of butter nationwide went up. Now, what's that all about? No. The periods designated as depressions by all of the economic establishment were periods such as 1866, 1873 to 1879, 1893, 1896, 1921, and 1930 to 1933. All of these were periods when the nation's savers, that's the vast majority of the people that live in the country, benefited greatly from the appreciation of their money. Now that means that the value of the money went up, and the average prices went down. And further, the period from 1866 to 1896, which was full of such depressions, was in total the greatest period of economic growth both in American history and in the history of any country in the world. Indeed, a chart of the butter consumption in the latter 19th century shows that people used more butter per capita in every one of these depressions. Thus, if there was a single person with a single brain in his head anywhere in the economic establishment, he would at least scratch his head if he were honest and say, Jesus, I can't figure that out. Why is it that in all of these depressions, the consumption of butter goes up, and in every one of these inflationary growth periods, they call them, the consumption of butter goes down and people get poorer? Now, why is that, boys and girls? It's because of censorship. Hell, you believe right now that there is coming a recession. That's what you believe. There's a recession. Your government just told you you're in a recession. Hell, this is a bull market. I'm doing just fine, thank you. The price of gasoline was cut in half. I see the prices of commodities and goods going down. Even though government's printing money like it's going out of style, I see prices going down. God, that helps me tremendously. Now, of course, if you've got a house, why in the hell did you buy a house for $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000? Couldn't you see that it was an unsustainable bubble? Oh, no. That's because the censors got to you. And they told you, no, the price of real estate goes up, up, up. It never goes down. That's a damn bald-faced lie. Real estate has always gone down. They said, stocks, stocks, stocks. Invest for the long term. You always make money in stocks. It's a damn lie. You never made a dollar in stock. Never. Now, there are people that make money in stocks. Those are Wall Street brokerage houses and banks and government. Big business. God, they make tons of money on inflation and stocks and stocks and bonds and bonds. Yeah, it's a great deal. For the few, inflation is wonderful. But for the many, it isn't. Now, using the butter as a standard over here, see, butter is a luxury item. If you don't think so, go to the grocery store and take a look at butter and the price of it, and then take a look at the I can't believe it's not butter, and take a look at the price of it, and then look in your shopping cart and see what you're buying. Ladies, you're not buying butter. You're living poorer and poorer. Now wake up to reality. And this is not a depression by any stretch of the imagination. You haven't got there yet. It's coming. Oh, God, is it coming. You wanted a change? Boy, are you going to get a change. Change is coming. And boy, is it going to be a sad day in Poughkeepsie. Now, the explanation is this. That the periods conveniently designated as depressions and recessions are not such at all. They are severe and mild credit contractions. And in a credit contraction, wealth flows from the paper aristocracy to the people. In a credit expansion, real wealth flows from the people to the papered aristocracy. When inflation is running at full bore, your wealth is running at full bore to the corporations, the government, and the bankers. And God, they love it, and they're going to give you more of it. And those are the people that are in control of your public schools and of your news media. Those are the censors out there that are controlling the flow of information and what you know and don't know and what you hear and don't hear. You get it from Brian Williams, and he gets it from the bankers, and they go out and they interview them. And here's what Lair Newshour does. They go out and they bring in two or three guys, and they have this seemingly contrarian view, and they sit there and they argue and they talk. They have never brought Ron Paul in on the NewsHour to argue the case for gold and silver coin. You have never seen the mainstream media bring an economist in and tell you the other side of the inflation story. They have two inflation bankers come in there and argue the nitty-gritty of the economy. You never hear the other side of the story. That's censorship, pure and simple. And I say that censorship over there needs to be ended. What then we may ask about unemployment in the Great Depression of the 1930s? The answer is that in the 1920s, the Republicans were confronted with a dilemma. Prices had doubled during World War I. When the prices doubled during World War I, it cheated all of the savers of the country of half of the real value of their savings. So to help the savers, the Republicans adopted the policy of a good 5-cent cigar, meaning a reduction in general prices in their pre-World War I level. They probably understood that this would require a period of unemployment, but the unemployment was brief, 1921. Whereas the harm to savers was long-term, years and years and years. So the unemployed were, at the worst, 25% of the labor force. The savers were the 75% majority of the population. Furthermore, the money put aside by the savers of the country went to buy, build machines which increased productivity and made the country richer. When faced with the choice between the savers and the unemployed, the Republicans made the right choice, and no such choice would have been necessary if the Democrats had not depreciated the currency during World War I. Now, Mr. Katz over here has reduced this to Republicans and Democrats. I want to point out here that inflation knows no political bounds, and the Republicans and the Democrats share equally in the blame. That's my view. But it's certainly true that in 1921, the Republicans did absolutely nothing to interfere with the marketplace. And the 1921 Depression lasted less than a year. And the prices were cut in half. And the bankers over here took it in the shorts. And I say, let the bankers take it in the shorts. Now, right now today, savings in the United States is at a minus level. See? There's no savings in the country. What we really need in America is savings. And no, we're not getting savings. We're getting inflation. Now, listen to this. Listen to this. I'm going to give you the numbers here. Now, this explains the problem. The concepts of depression and recession each have two different meanings. And when you give a concept two different meanings, it messes up your thinking because you can come to two different, even opposite conclusions. And this is what has befallen these cold bucks. Their thinking has become confused because they have accepted establishment concepts. Now, as for myself, I distinguish between a real depression and a depression, meaning a credit contraction. And definitely the United States is in a real depression where the country becomes poorer. But we have been in such a depression since 1972. The depression, boys and girls, began in 1972 because of the abandonment of the gold standard in 1971, and such a depression is usually marked by a sharply higher prices. Up until recently, neither Paul Volcker, Ben Bernanke, nor any other establishment economist has objected to this real depression because they were the whores for the paper aristocracy, and they always favor more paper money. And when Bernanke triples the U.S. money supply, it will exacerbate the real depression, but it will prevent any recession or depression, meaning credit contraction. So what you've got here, you've got the exact opposite. And so in your mind, you know, you have been programmed now to believe that we're in a recession, and God, we've got to avoid that. No, that's exactly backwards. You ought to welcome it with open arms. Interest rates should not be cut. They should be raised to encourage savings. But you see, you can't do that with a paper economy. And that's where this fiat paper comes in. This is why God told you. In Leviticus 19:35 and 36 and Deuteronomy 25:13, he said, "You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. You shall not practice these unjust weights and balances. Don't practice paper fiat currency." And we said, "Oh no, God, you don't understand the economy. You don't understand economics. Let us teach you a new line from Keynesian economics." Well, okay. Let's go ahead and teach God about economics, shall we? Come on, let's all teach God what a great mistake he made when he invented gold and silver in a bimetallic system, and how we've fixed his mistake with the Federal Reserve Bank. Huh? Come on. Now let me show you what's coming here. I've got about 5 minutes here. So are we going to have depression, that is a credit contraction, implying a decline of all prices? Or are we going to intensify our real depression, employing a sharp rise in prices? The answer is in the chart above. Federal Reserve credit is the first step in the money creation process, and it has already multiplied by 2.5 in 3 months. The Dallas Federal Reserve chief, Fisher, that's his name, Fisher, predicts that by the end of December it will be at a multiple of 3. The monetary base is already up by 71%, closing in on double. And nothing like this has ever happened in American history. To justify themselves, the establishment is spouting Keynesian theories, which have proven to be wrong in every single case since they were invented in the 1930s. I'm going to underline that. These Keynesian theories, which are being imposed upon us now, I say imposed because if you were to ask the average Joe Sixpack, do you want to bail out General Motors and the banks? So the average guy says, no, I don't want to do that. So that was imposed upon you by the censors. So to justify themselves, the establishment is spouting Keynesian theories, which have proven to be wrong in every case since they were invented in the 1930s. And they're going to be wrong again. Prices in America are going to explode. And if Mr. Fisher is right, we face a tripling of prices. So the people shouting depression in the establishment sense are making a dreadful error. It's an error which could cause you to make some very wrong decisions and lose a lot of your wealth. That's why I've been telling you, if you want to bet on inflation. And the reason is that in 13 weeks, the Federal Reserve has taken on $8.5 trillion of new money and put it into circulation. Now, it takes about 12 to 18 months for that to hit the marketplace. So if you thought you were going to get a short-term, fast recovery of your house prices by giving the banks a $700 billion bailout package, you had your head up the wrong end of your anatomy coming up out of the chute, because it takes 12 to 18 months for it to work anyway. And when this $8.5 trillion of new money hits the marketplace, they're going to have about a tripling in price. Why? Well, because you've just tripled the money supply. That's the bottom line. You want to know what prices are going to be like in 12 to 18 months? Are going to be three times. The price of gasoline at $2 today is going to be $8. Got that? So you're going to have $8 gasoline here shortly. So get ready for it. Because your wages aren't going to go up. Well, your wages are going to go up 3% and prices are going to go up 30%. I mean, I shouldn't say your wages aren't going to go up, but they're not going to keep up with inflation. They never do. Deflation is what we want. That's what's good for all Americans. That'll put more butter on your plate. But you've opted for inflation. And if you didn't opt for it, then the powers that be have opted for it for you. The censors have made that decision for you. They haven't left it to the marketplace. They haven't left it to you to decide. They've decided that for you. Now, let me bring this book to your attention again. It's called The Abuse Excuse. I am promoting a book here called The Abuse Excuse and Other Cop-Outs, Sob Stories, and Evasions of Responsibility. Free men must be responsible for their actions, and they must pay the piper. King David was called a man after God's own heart, and the one characteristic that he displayed in the scripture. Now, there's one thing that this guy displays that made him a man after God's own heart. When he made a mistake, he owned up to it. When he was confronted with his sin with David and Bathsheba, remember that story with Bathsheba? He said, yep, I did it, I'm guilty as hell, and I deserve the punishment that comes from it. And he got it, and he took it, and he shut his mouth and took his stripes. He went out and did a census. It's recorded in 2 Samuel chapter 22 or 23, something like that. And when he was confronted with that mistake, he said, yeah, I'm the guy that did that. I'm guilty. Conversely, most people, when they're confronted with a mistake, they deny it. They say, well, that's not me. I didn't do that. It's not my fault. And it was that woman that you gave me. It was that serpent that you put in the garden. God, you're the one that's at fault. Let's all blame God. See, it's not me. It's somebody else. And that's the point that Dershowitz is making. I agree with him. I don't like pornography, and I don't buy it. But pornography should be left to the marketplace, and we should be concentrating on selling morality. And if we did a better job of selling morality, they would have a tougher time selling pornography. That's the way you eliminate pornography. Not by censoring it. Not by determining for people what they can and cannot have. That produces poverty. That produces the kinds of problems that we're seeing here today in our economy. Censorship is what's causing our problems. We've got the wrong ideas. The censors have decided for us what we should think. I say that needs to be changed. Dershowitz, The Abuse Excuse, probably at Barnes & Noble. Hey, I'm about out of time here, boys and girls. We've got to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.